All right, here we are. October 5th, Coast to Coast Combat Hour. Ed Carbajal, as always, with Matthew Hawkins. This podcast is brought to you by AllAccessMMA.com. Make sure you check out AllAccessMMA.com for your mixed martial arts news. This week, I got to speak to, before we move forward with the news that we're going to talk about, I got to speak with Monica Franco from Invicta FC, who talked to me about her fighting through COVID when she was supposed to be on the Invicta FC 44 pay-per-view and fights that she potentially wants to have. So if you want to check that interview out, it'll be on the audio portion of this. It'll be after Matt and I's portion, and folks watching this on the YouTube channel, the Blogboard Jungle YouTube channel, you can check the description below and skip right ahead over to that if you like, because I already have the link on there. That interview is already live on the YouTube channel. So Matt, it's we got some bad news out of your favorite sport
this
week.
Yeah. Not my favorite sport, but one I do enjoy. The sad news is, we started the show off with rest in peace to Justin Thornton, who passed away from injuries that he sustained in a bare knuckle fighting championship event on August 20th. A mismatch fight he probably should not have been in. He was knocked out, and the injuries that he suffered had nothing, or I shouldn't say have nothing to do, but the injuries were a result of how he landed on the canvas. Just for visual, for maybe some of who hadn't seen it. So like when we see a lot of guys get knocked out, they kind of go down flat like a board. They hit the mat. In this one, while falling down, he curled into kind of a C shape of his body, and then when he hit the mat, his forehead basically it did hit the canvas, which apparently led to some spinal injury, some partial paralyzation, and obviously the issues that eventually led to, I guess, him getting pneumonia in the hospital. So it's sad.
It sucks.
It sucks. So that's why you got to be careful. I got to be careful how I try to explain the way I see it. Because obviously,
is that the one you were at?
No. I was watching this when the knockout happened on TV. It was one where I actually paused and I said, oh shit. You know, like that guy's in bad, bad shape. Mm. When you've watched as many fights as we have, you tend to pick up.
Oh
stuff.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Yeah. You pick up stuff that maybe a more casual fan doesn't notice, but when I saw it, my immediate thought was that guy's not in good shape. Now mm-hmm. I hadn't heard much about it for a couple weeks, so it had slipped my mind. But with that being said, I'm seeing a lot of talk. The initial quick MMA fan reaction was, "Let's ban bare knuckle fighting. Let's." You know, bare knuckle fighting's garbage. All they do is have a bunch of old men fighting who have been knocked out a million times, yada yada. And while there might be some truth to that, the injuries he sustained were not as a result of being hit with a bare knuckle punch. He was knocked out, but we've seen multiple people knocked out and face first into the canvas mm-hmm. in kickboxing, boxing, MMA, any kind of standing karate. We saw it in the Olympics. The guy got knocked out cold. He ended up winning the damn gold medal, and I think it was Taekwondo.
Don't get me started on that.
You know, or whatever it was. Okay, but that's the point. Like, there's brutal knockouts are happening in all these sports. In this case,
check out my news later for my thoughts on that.
Yeah. To me, the result was him falling, hitting the mat. I'm not sure how his age plays a role in that. I think he was 38 years old. 36 years old. So in the world of combat sports, his age wasn't necessarily over the top with what we're seeing these days. I also see, and I Nolan King, who we massively respect, interviewed Mike Mazzulli, the head of one of your favorite commissions, the Mohegan Sun Athletic Commission. Mm-hmm. And I see in his comments that he's saying how it's needs to come to an end. Bare knuckle fighting needs to stop using washed up mixed martial arts and kickboxers and boxers to compete. In less than a year ago, Mike Mazzulli sanctioned Melvin Manhoff to fight.
I think you're misreading. You're reading the quote without reading the article, because that's not what he was saying.
Isn't he? Okay, then maybe you can correct me. But isn't he saying things need to change and bare knuckle boxing needs to do a better job of who they allow to fight?
Yeah, and they so he's saying that the commissions, not just bare knuckle boxing, because not for nothing, you and I both know the promoters are kind of just, I mean, and the commissions. They're, everyone's looking for their money grab to hold these events. But the I'll read the statement, and this is from Nolan King's article. Mm-hmm. Concerning factors that many commissions do not require any imaging study, CT scan, or MRI scan in a sport where individuals are at risk of acute and chronic head injuries. And their findings have found that the places that are holding these bare knuckle events, they're kind of just doing it passively to the point that it's probably not even being done. And that's what he's asking for. That's what has to stop. They have to do their due diligence. And
but what does his brain scan have to do with how he fell to the floor?
What the fuck kind of question is that?
No, I mean because the same guy who's criticizing other commissions licensed Melvin Manhoff to fight Corey Anderson in a main event within the last year.
He's taking into account this particular fighter's history with the amount of losses and the amount of damage he's done.
Uh-huh.
They didn't do their due diligence in looking into that. I mean, they just looked to license. I mean, even right now, we're talking about Nolan King's article. They're going to have, what's his name? Who's like got 13 losses or something like that in their next event. And it's just like, okay, you guys are hyping up these events, but you have to make sure these fighters are ready to go.
Late 30s
is not, it's prime. Yeah. It's towards the end of your prime. Fighting is a young man's sport. Late 30s is definitely, you know, that's when you should start them for combat sports. Mm-hmm. And I'm an old fucking man already saying this. I'm way past my 30s. But, you know, that's definitely towards the end. You got to start thinking about doing other things when you're in your late 30s in combat sports.
Do you think we'll have – okay, well, all I ask is that the fans who are saying that BKFC should be held liable for having this guy in the ring – Andre Arlovsky is one of the poster boys for being sent astro sailing in his career. He co-main events UFC in 2 weeks. If he somehow, now the Fedor knockout, he went face first down on the mat. If his head tilts another 30 degrees down and we have a tragedy, do we talk about then banning UFC because of the way he fell to the floor? They've signed Greg Hardy, a knockout artist, to now fight 44-year-old Oleinik. If Oleinik gets beat into a oblivion and tragedy were to strike, do we blame the UFC? And I mean, I know we will blame the UFC, but when we talk about banning the UFC, we've talked about the possibility of death in these sports for a long, long time. And we've always kind of agreed that like the DDT basically would be kind of how it would happen. And that's basically what happened in this fight.
No one can control how someone falls. You know what I mean?
But I guess that's my point. Like if Kleckler, the opponent, who was 11-1 in MMA, if he would have been the one knocked out and who passed away as a result of the injury, would we be talking about BKFC regulating their sport better? Or would we be talking about banning BKFC because one of their fighters died?
I mean, you could always ask what if, but that's not what happened.
Well, yeah, but that's even Mazzulli's going what if, because he's looking for the future too. Maybe.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's so, but that's the thing. I mean, that towards the end of this statement, it's on the Nolan King's article, the PDF. You can read the full statement for
I read it, so maybe I didn't pick up the end, but it seems to me like he's not bad mouthing MMA and stuff. He's bad mouthing.
They actually formed a committee to examine and make suggestions for bare knuckle boxing when they had their conference this year. So it's not like they're not trying to ban it, but they're definitely saying the commissions where the states that are holding where this sport can be held, they need to not just rush to book fights so fast without doing their research on the guys that they're licensing, because, you know, maybe, I mean, it's unfortunate. It sucks to say, because I mean, the other side of it is too, and I know a couple other folks had this opinion, you know, somebody like the whole Evander Holyfield thing, mm-hmm. His own family didn't want him to do his match, but he still did it because he wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. So these athletes, you're never going to have them talk themselves out of doing something, especially a combat sport athlete. So, I mean, I think that's where it is. And it's almost silly when you talk about trying to regulate violence, because at the end of the day, you know what I mean? That's what it is.
That's a plenty valid point. I guess my thing is with Mazzulli is, again, the Manhoff thing. Like, we're talking, if he's worried about the safety of fighters, anybody looking at Melvin Manhoff versus Corey Anderson, what's Manhoff, 45, 46 now? The guy's been knocked out like 18 times in his career. So, like, to me, it's like the wrong guy saying that, you know?
Yeah,
like,
but
and, you know, and we're going to end up with talking about his commission and his judges here shortly, too. So, I don't, Mike Mazzulli's kind of like, okay, bud, like, I don't, you don't
bring well, yeah, to the table. That's actually a good way to segue away from this. And so we might as well talk about Bellator 267's main event. Actually, while we move into that, so, you know, we host this podcast on Anchor, and Spotify owns Anchor. They've added a new feature. So if you listen to this podcast on Spotify, I'm going to put a poll in it. And I would like folks that listen on Spotify to sound off, because, I mean, I already know where Matt stands on this, but, you know, who do you think won the main event of Bellator 267 between Douglas Lima and Michael Venom Page? Because I disagreed with the decision. I know Matt disagreed with this, because we were literally talking immediately after we started messing each other. So I'll post the poll, and if you listen on Spotify, put it up. We'll read the results on next week's episode. But we might as well get into it, Matt. Like, what the fuck?
Well, let me just start off by saying that I don't necessarily consider this a robbery, because I think that is too strong of a term for what we saw here. I believe it was a fairly close fight. I just don't understand the judging criteria at all, because without rewatching the fight, because God bless you if you can sit through that for a second time. I mean, I shouldn't say that. It had its moments.
Yeah, it was fun. I liked it.
It should have been 5 rounds. Bellator needs to get off the damn, you know, they need to get caught up with
shout
that.
Shout out to Keith Schillen, who stomps his foot every time at every Bellator event out here in the Northeast.
Yeah.
He actually, I feel bad because I broke his balls a little bit about it. He was like, all right, I'll stop asking about it. But maybe he needs to start asking about it.
Yeah, again. And I'm not even saying every fight needs to be 3 rounds, but you need, or 5 rounds, but you should pick and choose in a fight like this, where the first fight was 5 rounds, even though it, you know, this fight should have been also. But so I guess the way I look at it, you can tell me if you saw it differently. I saw the first round where MVP came out, did some damage, not much, but he did, in theory, maybe drop Lima. It looked like he dropped him to me, although John McCarthy kept telling me he didn't drop him. So that left me a little bit confused. I was watching on my phone. So, yeah.
I wish they had different audio options for the Showtime app.
Like Snoopcast or whatever. Yeah.
I'd rather listen to Snoop.
So Lima came out, was a little bit more the aggressor in the beginning. Or not Lima, I'm sorry. Page came out, was the aggressor early. Did a little bit of damage about halfway through the round. Lima took him down, didn't do a whole lot of damage, but controlled from the top for the rest of the round.
Mm-hmm.
Fair. I mean, pretty. And the judges in, I believe, all 3 cases gave the first round to Lima. Okay, cool. Second round, MVP comes out. In my mind, controls basically the whole round. Really drops him at least one time, maybe a second, outstrikes him. Lima doesn't even try a takedown, I don't recall, and basically just kind of slow round, but MVP does, but in my opinion, by far more damage, wins the second round. Third round, guys come out, kind of even striking back and forth. I don't recall anything major on the feet. About, you know, halfway through the round again, maybe a little less, minute and a half left in the fight. Lima gets the takedown. This time does much more damage than he did in the first round. But essentially, to me, they were kind of a mirror of each other, the first and the third round. I give that round to Lima. Judges 2 out of 3, I believe, decided that no, MVP won the third round. So I just don't understand the consistency. When they start reading off the names, Cologne and Douglas Crosby, it always seems to be the case. You pointed out in our conversations that that's the international commission that they bring from Mohegan Sun and our boy Mike Mazzulli. He brings his crew to, you know, London, to Ireland, to, you know, Bulgaria, wherever the heck they decide to show up. And that's who runs the show. And that's their judges that they bring with them. Just seems like it's always the same 3 judges. You cover the events in Mohegan Sun. How many of those events, if you've covered 25 Bellator events, let's just say a number, how many of those would you say Douglas Crosby was a judge at?
I mean, I feel like he was definitely at the last few that I was there for pre-COVID, because I haven't been there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I wasn't there through all of COVID. But, you know, he's definitely usually there. And I can usually, I mean, sometimes he surprised me with some of where I'm like, oh, okay, you know, like I've agreed with some of his scoring. But like this one, and again, this is my opinion. I just got, because of what I know about him, I feel like, and I always reference his two appearances on Chael Sonnen's podcast, where I don't know if he was drunk or high or just being a dick because he enjoyed being a dick. But when Chael Sonnen pressed him and asked about the type of training and what do you have to go through to become a judge, he never answered the question. There's still never answered two appearances and didn't answer the fucking question. But I just felt like that was just him. Let me score for MVP just to fuck with everybody out there. That you know what I mean? Because if and I'm telling you, if you listen to the guy, listen to those two episodes, do a search for it. Because articles were written about it, because that you know, even Chael got into it with him in the first appearance. I just got the vibe that I'm like, yo, this guy likes to fucking aggravate people, and just he gets off on making people pissed off. And I just when I heard that score, when I heard Doug and Doug Crosby 29-28 or whatever it was, I was just like, of course you did. Of course you did. Because you know, it's going to, you know, people, because, you know, people are going to, it's a questionable fight to call again, with everything you said, with Lima on top and his top control, that he did score a knockdown of his own. I was in round three, the multiple takedowns, the lay and pray defense of MVP. Cause there's that one point, I think it was in round two, where he looks at the ref to kind of like, hey, stand us up. Because he's got nothing outside of holding on to Lima with not for nothing. Shout out to MVP and his grip strength. It looked like Lima had trouble even in the later rounds to getting his hands free when he was controlling him just by holding his wrist. Usually guys can just, you know, when somebody grabs your wrist, if you angle out and go out through the exit point of where they're grabbing you and you're sweaty, when you're sweaty, that's easy to do. And Lima, if you rewatch it, Lima was trying to do that and MVP wasn't easily letting go, so he must have some serious grip strength. But I mean I don't know, because I don't want to take it, I'm not trying to knock him for his win, but I definitely want to knock those scores, because I just feel like that was more to be an asshole to the fans and like kind of pour some salt on us to see who reacts, so he can sit at home and say, look at what I did, you know what I mean? And then here's the other thing too, and I don't know if you saw I put it out on Twitter this morning. You know, every Tuesday after an event, that if it's on Friday, like if they did a Saturday event, they would update the rankings on Wednesday. But today, the Bellator MMA updated their rankings, and in their men's pound for pound, Michael Page is now newly inserted in it. And I'm just like, I don't know if he's pound for pound. Like,
no, you know? No. And your take on Crosby is obviously your own opinion, nothing that you would know anything, but we are talking about a judge who has been investigated for corruption.
Yeah.
So it's not as if we're going after somebody who's never faced some scrutiny for his decision-making as far as fights he would judge and how he would judge them and who.
And Jaron Villel was refereeing matches at that thing too, that I was already like, I'm surprised nobody died. I shouldn't say died, but you know what I mean? Like,
no, that's terrible.
Like, but, I'm just like, you know, Jaron Villel was there refereeing, and I was waiting for like odd like things to happen. I mean, shockingly, nothing did with the matches he ref. I was like, okay, you know, thank God. Whew. You know,
but yeah, I don't know. Like I said, it wasn't a robbery. It was just weird. It was the whole vibe was weird. And like you said, when this is going to go after the commission a little bit, and even maybe Bellator, but when you have a commission that it's all kind of an inside job a little bit, I know that's all the commissions, but it just, I don't know. Again, Mazzulli's out here talking about fighter safety and stuff, but he's bringing in corrupt judges and you know, doing his thing. So I guess that's why.
I mean, that's a good question to ask, is like, okay, I mean, if the promotion has to go by whatever the commission does, which is usually how Scott Coker responds when you ask him, you know, if you ask him anything about officiating, he's like, you know, we go by whatever the commission. Okay, in the state that we're in. Okay, so if then what is the commission's selection process, especially like, I don't know, because you know what? It's not something we're ever going to get rid of, though, because if you look at the whole Adelaide Bird situation, and it's not something, there's definitely some sort of good old boy network going on in the fight business, and it's always been there. I mean, who are we kidding, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, I think the way to question it would be, Mr. Mazzulli, if you want to hold other commissions accountable for their actions, then how do you explain bringing in a judge who has known corruption? Like, you really, you know, although one has to do with health and one not so much, you're still talking about the careers of these fighters. Mm-hmm. And it's not picking on anybody. But the facts are, you're bringing in a judge who was seen to be corrupt, and it has that image of being corrupt and has an image of a bad reputation, mm-hmm. from, like you said, on his podcast. So I don't know. I mean, we feel like the whole show's been kind of negative, but it just you know, I guess that's just kind of
Trent Rensmith. We should get Trent from.
Jeez, yeah, no, I'm moving on. But yeah, I don't know. But anyways,
but you know what? I mean, I don't understand how, because that was in London, and obviously MMA is, you know, popular. So like I mean, and who regulates Cage Warriors and stuff? Like why aren't they going to, you know what I mean? Like why isn't, I just don't get, like, because I know the UFC also self-regulates when they go overseas. I don't understand. I mean, that's something I should probably look into. Like why is there no, why do we have to bring, you know, if we have the fucking Coast to Coast Combat Hour fight promotion, why do we have to bring our own judges with us when we go overseas? If you guys have the sport there, and, you know, I don't know what the rules and regs are. That's probably something that Eric McGracken probably could answer better than I'm actually going to ask him that. I'll send him this clip and ask him, or tag him, put this clip up, because I mean, Jesus, it's funny. Ever since I spoke to him, so many things have happened that I'm just like, man, that's a question for Eric McGracken, combat sports law. So
yeah, no, I had the same question. Is there no commission in the UK? Do they not have any kind of sport commission? Is it so corrupt over there that the Bellator doesn't trust them? Like, why, or UFC doesn't trust? I mean, the UFC is a gigantic conglomerate, so I can kind of understand them being able to ship everything. But we got Bellator. Why? If there's no three, there's not three good judges in London. Like, we have to, during a pandemic, we got to fly three American judges. I believe they were all three American judges. We got to fly them across the friggin' ocean to judge this event. We can't, there's nobody else, you know? I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm delusional, but that just seems weird to me. And I don't, it just seems weird that you have the same judges. Yeah. It always is the same thing. You know, I mean, you know, we always talk about it. We always joke about it. But when we hear certain names, you sit there and you go, uh-oh.
No,
you
know? There's a lot of names that have a lot of reputations. And I know I'm not the only one. I mean, especially like when it comes to certain refs. And I mean, the Doug Crosby thing, you know, I think he's made himself. And it, again, my opinion is he knows about this. Like, he knows that this has gotten attention on him. And it's almost like he enjoys it. I feel like it, like, and that's why I feel like I'm just being a conspiracy. Maybe I've been locked inside too long from the fucking pandemic or whatever, but you know, I as soon as I heard his name, I was like, he's going to go the other way just to fuck us all.
With that said, I'm not sure exactly where Douglas or Lima's got to deal with now, three losses in a row.
I know.
So that's a dilemma, although he's got the trilogy with MVP that's automatically set up, you mm-hmm. would think. MVP, I'm not sure how he can't go in the cage with Amosov. I don't care what they try to. I mean, I don't know. You know, his takedown defense is white belt level, and his ability to get up, he doesn't even try. Like you said, his technique to get up was to try to stall. Basically, you know, 2001.
And if I was a judge, I'd score against that. I'm like, you're not doing anything. The guy on top of you is controlling the fight right now. I'm not standing you. I mean, you know what I mean? Like that's definitely a 10-9 for Lima for me, or 10-8 for Lima. You know what I mean? Like
you shouldn't punish the guy for not landing strikes because the other guy is
holding on for dear life. Yeah.
Stall. Like the guy,
he would have gotten carded in Pride for that.
Yeah. You're probably right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, Pride might have carded both of them just because the Yakuza wanted their money, but exactly. And you know, so I don't know, but just weird. The whole thing was weird. Three rounds. You know,
it was just a weird weekend overall. Like when you look at that call, that was Friday, and then I did that. I mean, just briefly. Well, I mean, I know not a lot of people watch it because I did the live results for CFFC 101 on Fight Pass. And the co-main event there is actually might get overturned because of there was a submission victory. I'm sorry, I forget the names of the fighters, but it was a co-main event, and somebody tapped. Well, the fight was stopped because the guy's hands were trapped because he was trying to defend the guillotine choke, but he was doing everything right. He was actually very spry and mobile, but when the referee looked in them for some reason, and I think it was just kind of like a weird shell shock. Because the fight before that had a guillotine submission that was stopped a little too late. So I feel like the guys were just kind of like on, you know, walking on eggshells, like, oh my God, you know, let's wake up. And they saw the very same thing kind of replay in front of them. And the referee stopped it, and they gave the submission, technical submission victory to the opponent. But like as soon as the fight was stopped and the guy's hands were free, he slams his hands on the mat. He's like, what are you doing? I'm not out. And it was just like a weird, even John Morgan, who, you know, he does commentary for them, but he's also MMA junkie. He said he was going to look into it. And I know that was the last update that I heard was that the losing team is definitely going to appeal it and try to get it overturned, or at least turn to a no contest. So that happened early Saturday. And then Saturday night, I know we were briefly just talk about it before we get into Wilder Fury 3, the no contest headbutt from the UFC event with Kevin Holland and
Dawkins.
Yeah. So like that was, I mean, that seemed easier to do, but it's just like a weird weekend of like odd judging and weird things happening in fights. I mean,
yeah, no, that, and the weird thing about the Holland Dawkins fight is that I don't even think that was handled correctly.
Like, yeah, they're like chattering about it for a while.
Yeah, so you know you had Holland get knocked out. So here we're gonna talk about fighter safety again. So Holland was basically knocked out cold with a headbutt, landed on the mat, and woke up when he landed on the mat. They're scheduled for a rematch in 38 days. Mm-hmm. So you know I'm thinking you might need more than a month and a week to recover from being knocked out cold with a headbutt. But you know I'm not in control of fighter safety. Yeah. But getting back to that, the referee acknowledged at the time of the headbutt that there was an accidental headbutt. Then the fight continued for, it's hard to say exactly how much time. I can't remember the time, but
it who knows with the ESPN Plus cards.
It continued for a minute, give or take, before a submission choke, a guillotine. No, it was a rear naked choke was eventually locked in and held and tapped. They, at that point, then went to the replay and overturned it. To a no contest. I don't believe that that's necessarily how it's supposed to happen. I think they're supposed to pause the fight immediately when they believe that happens, but I might be wrong. But it just seems like a weird thing because if Holland had knocked out Dawkins in, you know, 30 seconds later, instead of getting choked out, would they have went back and called it a no contest? It was still an accidental headbutt. So it just, I know this, we're still trying to figure out how this instant replay stuff works. Cause I know I sure as hell don't know how it works.
It's new. What did they start doing that in 2018, 2019? So that hasn't been around that long.
It hasn't been around that long, but you would think in, you know, 3.5 years, we might have
processed. Yeah. But the reason why we're confused is because every time, I mean, back before COVID, when they're traveling from state to state, you had to be told at the start of the broadcast, they're using the old unified rules. We're using the unified rules. You know, instant replay is a thing, you know, so that's why it's confusing for us. But the thing about, I mean, going back to safety, the thing that the edge that the UFC has when it comes to fighter safety and doing due diligence or whatever, all the stuff that Mazzulli says commission should do, is that the UFC does that and they have their own doctors to do it if they feel like someone else isn't doing, you know, if the state that they're in isn't doing their due diligence. Look at the Aljamain Sterling situation with Peter Yan. You know, people shitting on Aljamain Sterling as if he's the one pulling out, but it's doctors saying that his neck isn't ready for him to be fighting so soon, still after his neck surgery. So it's not even him pulling out. It's the doctors involved in checking the fighter's health to to say yes, they can move forward and no, they can't. And I mean, neck surgery is a pretty major thing. So it's better to be safe than sorry there. But I don't know, man. 38 days for that type of finish. Pulling over carjackers and holding him for the cops to come probably helps make a decision to move.
Yeah,
forward.
I mean, there. I'm not. Yeah, I want to see the rematch. I'm not. I like Holland, Kevin Holland. So I'm not trying to like badmouth that. I just wonder like where we're gonna draw the line. Like if something happens to Kevin Holland in his next fight, are we going to look back and go, wow, they let him fight 38 days after being knocked out with a headbutt? Like, I feel like you can't be always a Monday morning quarterback. Like,
no.
And I understand being
proactive. Shout out to Kevin Holland, too, for, he handled that like a champ. You know, even afterwards in the post-fight press conference, he even though they called no contest, he was like, as far as I'm concerned, I lost. You know, he was just like, what'd he say? Street rules. And he referenced his Kung Fu training. He was like, you know, if it was in the streets, that would have been good to go and get game over for me. So, which is more reason why he wants to rematch. But I mean, listen, you know, when funny things like that happen, they definitely, that's one thing the UFC, I'll say, does like a great job. When that happened with Poirier Alvarez? Or funny stoppages and people, when people want to see a fight again, they usually do run it back. I forget who. I'm pretty sure it was Dustin Poirier and Eddie Alvarez.
Yeah.
Yeah, with that weird stoppage that they did it again. But, you know, that's one thing the UFC does good. So, I mean, I think that's warranted. I thought the no contest was warranted. Like you said, the discussion maybe was a little funny, but, you know.
It got to the right solution.
Live TV, folks.
I think they came to the right conclusion at the end. It would be nice if we had a cleaner way of knowing what was going on, but you know, we mentioned rematches, we've been talking about people who got beaten badly. That brings us to Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder 3. First fight draw, second fight, seventh round TKO due to corner stoppage, and that sets us up for this third bout between two of the top, you know, four heavyweight boxers.
You know what's funny about this match is like because I was really looking forward to Fury Joshua when that was supposed to be a thing, and then, you know, Bob Arum and Top Rank, and they did whatever they did with the legal side, that stuff that they can do to get this rematch to happen because of whatever contracts existed before. So it's happening, and I was upset because we didn't get Joshua Fury. But then Joshua lost to Alexander Usyk. So I don't even know if you could sell me a Fury Joshua or Fury Wilder now, because, you know, the way that it's been happening with heavyweight boxing, the closer we got, now that it's finally here, I'm actually really looking forward to this. Like, as much as I was the last one, because, you know, if you look at the video game rules, you know, best two out of three, right? Like, you know, you have to win two fights to really say you beat a guy when you have this type of rivalry. So as you mentioned the draw, you mentioned the Fury's victory from the last one. So this one is that I'm actually excited because now both guys really know each other. They know what to expect, and we got to see who does what different. Like, maybe Wilder won't wear an Iron Man suit when he walks into the arena this time.
He sounds like he's got something up his sleeve. Okay.
I really hope he doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, come on, dude. Come on.
Yeah, that was one of his weak excuses following his last loss, is that he was drained energy-wise from wearing his uniform into the ring, for those that didn't know. It's a heavyweight world championship boxing match. And in my world, Tyson Fury is the world heavyweight boxing champion, and the best heavyweight in the world. And Deontay Wilder is kind of the Mike Tyson of this era without the hoopla so much, maybe. I don't know, a big power puncher. Mm-hmm. The first fight was basically Fury dominating, and then he got dropped towards the end. I think he got dropped twice in the fight, actually, which evened out the cards and ended up in a draw. I thought Fury still won the first fight. Second fight, it looked to me like it was a schooling. You know, you had Fury basically dominated from start to finish, to the point where, you know, the corner had to stop the fight. I don't, barring Wilder coming out with some super game plan that we've never really known him to have, as far as, you know, anything beyond going in and just trying to really, really hurt your opponent. I don't know what, I don't see how he can win this fight. I feel like unless Fury takes it off, or it's the world of boxing and they want to see Fury Wilder 4, you know, we'll get Adelaide Bird, Douglas Crosby, and you know,
Saldivar. Oh my God. Yeah.
Three. you know, so I don't know, but it's a heavyweight world championship fight. When you got a puncher like Wilder and you've got the character like Fury, it makes for a really cool storyline. But I mean, I gotta think Fury wins the fight. It would be hard for me to pick Wilder to win. The odds aren't that extreme. Right now, it looks like Fury's about almost a 3-1 favorite, whereas Wilder's about a 2-1 underdog. Not crazy odds. I would have thought they would have been a little bit more stretched out, especially on the underdog side for Wilder. Hmm. But you know,
that's funny. I haven't even looked at odds yet. I'm glad you mentioned them.
Yeah, I mean, -280 for Fury seems like smart money to me. But again, you got to be kind of a big gambler to, you know, you're basically risking $300 to try to win 100. So unless you're throwing down some coin, you're not really making a whole lot on him. But I just don't see how he can lose this fight, barring a, you know, I mean, he could always get knocked out real quick.
That's what I was gonna say. Like that's the intrigue, especially with Wilder, you know, and you look again, looking at the first fight, he's got that puncher's, he's got that power, and he's got that puncher's chance, more than a puncher's chance, I would say, because again, they've experienced each other already. So like, he knows what to expect based on the first two times, and so does Fury. The thing about that is, if you talk about the pure boxer, the one that's a trained boxer, student of the sweet science, it's Tyson Fury, and that's where he has more options to bring something different. Whereas, you know, Wilder is going to probably swing for the fences until he can't swing anymore, unless he's got something new up his sleeve too. But he only needs one or two of those punches to land. To make things, you know, get people on their feet.
Yeah, we had kind of said that before the last fight. I hope that Wilder does come out and shows a more composed, you know, maybe not more composed, I don't know what the word would be, but more of a scientific attack to the fight. It would be cool to see that he's evolved and learned something from that last fight, because then that would add intrigue to the fight. If we come in here and we just see some wild haymakers, and by the end of the first round Wilder's already got a busted up nose from being jabbed 26 times, you know, then we realize that there wasn't a whole lot there, you know, and then the punching mystique ends after a few of these losses. You know, but you know, for boxing, Wilder winning is probably the thing to happen, you know, but I think Fury is just,
and
proven to be just dangerous.
Yeah. And I have to say too, it's really nice to have some real boxing, like a real true boxing event to look forward to after going through months of, you know, the Triller, Paul, Logan, Holyfield belt, like these weird carnival, you know, events that are using boxing rules. You know, people say it's bringing more eyeballs to boxing. Maybe it is, but you know, hopefully this showing kind of reminds fans, like, okay, this is, you know, this is the king's sport of kings, or whatever, I forget what the term is, but you know what I mean, like, this is the thing, this is the original combat sport that everybody grew up, you know, watching, and this is what gets people, you know, excited for a fight night. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that's what this pay-per-view does this weekend.
And I'm sure it'll sell a ton of pay-per-views. It's going to be great for the promoters. I hope the fans, you know, we get a good fight out of it. And I think no matter what, I don't think anybody's going to feel like they didn't get their money's worth. I think you're either seeing somebody get knocked out, or you're seeing two guys basically go toe to toe for, you know, 10-12 rounds like we did in the first.
I have a feeling they're both gonna leave it all out there too.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that, you know, we it all on paper, this is set up to be another good boxing match, but you know, it's just, you never know. So I think the main thing is that we get a huge boxing match. Like you say, we don't have some rap battle tied to it, or we don't have, you know, some celebrity, yeah. You know,
that's the weekend after.
Yeah. No, I, not that I have anything wrong with Big Daddy Kane and KRS-One.
No, you know, KRS-One, I got a KRS-One story, you know, KRS-One, that's my hero, man. And I love KRS-One, but anyway, I mean, we're about to run out of time. So if you want to take us out, might as well take us out. Oh, but really quick, I mean, we should mention Marina Rodriguez and Mackenzie Dern fighting at the UFC. I mean, that's kind of like a strawweight, you know,
contendership. Title contender.
Yeah,
eliminator for sure. And that should be a good fight. The whole card as a whole is, you know, king of the cage level. So, yeah. You know, but that main event was definitely one to check out, just especially for that in between the boxing and all the other stuff that's inevitably going on in the world of fighting. But looking forward to this. So check us out. The show on Twitter at Combat Hour, Coast to Coast Combat Hour Coast to Coast Combat Hour on Instagram. You can always check us out at allaccessmma.com for our video podcast. You can follow me, Matthew Hawkins, at MMAHawk21 on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow Ed at Carbazol on Twitter, Carbeersol on Instagram, and Old Head Carb on Twitch. Ed, we'll see who the World Heavyweight Boxing Champion is come next week, and start to look forward to a bunch more MMA action.
Yes, sir. And audio listeners, stay tuned for the Monica Franco interview coming up next.
Thank you.
I haven't done this in a while.
All right. Ed Carbajal here with Fearless Monica Franco of Invicta FC. Monica, I'm so happy to get to talk to you. Jillian DeCorsi, Lionheart Jill, has been hyping you up to me for months.
Oh, man.
So it's funny because right around when she was trying to because I meant to interview you for the fight that you were supposed to have that you had to cancel when you got sick. And she was kind of like trying to get that going, and then that happened, and I was just like, "Oh, okay, then, you know, we'll just wait and for her to fight that thing off." But But how was that whole experience, by the way? I mean, if you don't mind walking us through, I know it was quite the battle.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite surprised at how sick I got, to be honest, because I remember when my first Invicta fight, and then I flew home, I had caught the flu. And that took me about a week. Nothing too crazy. This one was like the flu on steroids, I would say. I had really severe body aches, super like muscle fatigue, dizziness. I think I collapsed once.
Wow.
I was coughing out blood at one point, but I think that was just from like the constant coughing that I was doing. I didn't have any like super deep respiratory issues or anything. Like I was just like regular cough, spitting out stuff, but I could still breathe. I was a little bit nauseated. I lost my sense of taste and smell. I still don't have that back 100%. Like I can smell things here and there and I can taste things more than I could, but I lost all of that too. So
oh, wow.
It was probably the worst I ever got as far as being sick on the flu, you know, COVID. So, yeah. Wow. I mean, other people got it worse though. Some of my cousins got hit real, real hard. Like I didn't have like a fever or anything. I felt like if anything, I was on the verge of hitting a fever. I never did that. So, you know, it just makes you grateful that, you know, when you get out of it, just grateful to know that, you know, you have another day to like just achieve the things that you want to, you know. So many people haven't had that opportunity, unfortunately. So I just feel very blessed.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad I'm happy to hear that you're coming out of it too. And enough of the negative stuff. Let's talk about it seems like it's funny because I know when I've had surgery or injuries or when I've gotten sick, when I was younger, anyway, I'm an old man now, but back then, like when you're getting out of something like that, that competitive spirit inside you, the martial artist in you, you kind of have to argue. You have that battle with yourself of like, let me not jump back in too soon because I'm just getting, just because I'm feeling a little bit better. The question I'm leading to, I have it in my notes here, because you had, when we, you and I set this up, you tweeted something about any potential opponent you like to compete with. Jillian wanted me to ask you that too. She mentioned it because you had tweeted something about, because you're so ready to get back in there. Is there somebody that you were trying to call out or a fight that you specifically want?
Well, not necessarily call out, but I mean, I wanted Serena De Jesus. You know, I just kind of thought, well, since she's the one who replaced me, like, you know, fight the winner, you know, that match, and she happened to be the matchup. But I don't know where she's at with wanting to fight me. But fortunately, Haley Cowan, she just like DM'd me a couple of nights ago and was just like, and she posted it on her IG too, like, just like, hey, at Realist Monica Franklin, at somebody else, but I don't know who it was, but she was just saying, like, I hear you guys are looking for a fight, blah, blah, blah. And I know my previous opponent, Tina, had actually tagged me and her, I guess, on a post that Invicta had done, like, you know, who should we see next in the cage kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. So a couple of people posted me and Serena, and then Tina posted me and Haley. And I was just like, I mean, why not? I think it'd be a great matchup. I think our styles would make for a really good fight.
Yeah, I
agree. She seems like a gamer. I'm a gamer. And I mean, it's all about fighting the best of the best. If you want to be the best, you got to, like, you know, go up against some of the best. And I think it would be a good matchup. I think that people would tune in for that.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it's funny that that the original one that you wanted, and you know, with De Jesus and Cowan, I don't, if I'm remembering correctly, I think she lost her last fight. So, I mean, it would probably be one of those cases where like your fight fell out, and she wants to get back at, you know, into winning.
Yeah,
I think you could definitely sell that fight to a lot of folks that are interested. The event that you were supposed to be on, that was the Invicta's first pay-per-view one?
I think so. Yeah. I believe so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's pretty bummed, but it's okay. Things happen for a reason, you know?
Yeah, no, it's better. I mean, obviously, we need you healthy to, you know, and ready to go.
Yeah.
Oh, instead of, you know, trying to force things. But that was their first run at pay-per-view. So it was kind of like a missed opportunity, but it was the first one. So that means there's going to be more, right?
Right.
Yeah. So talking about like goals and looking ahead, I mean, you had tweeted also that you were looking at going towards a 135 pound title. Is that I mean, because don't you normally fight at 125?
No, I fought at 35 and 25 before. A lot of my amateur career, I actually did a little bit of 45, and then I shot down to 25. But then I just felt more comfortable, like, coming back into it, starting off at 35. So, I mean, yeah, that's where I'm at, and that's what I posted. Again, it's like knowing that you have the capabilities and abilities to, I don't know if that made sense, but, you know, to fight against the best. And, I mean, one of my goals is to hopefully hold a belt one day, for sure. I mean, I've been doing it for so long. I've fought a lot of great talent. I've trained with a lot of great talent. So, I mean, I don't know. It's just one of those things that I've always held close to my heart, but it's kind of time now to kind of like show everybody a little bit more. And this is my goals. This is where I want to get. I mean, I believe it. I just feel like it's just a matter of time, you know, just got to keep working hard though. So, yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, it did. And it's funny, you actually led me into my next one, talking about you've been doing this for so long. I mean, we were talking before I started recording about the difference between beautiful Hawaii and ugly New Jersey, where I'm at. So the mixed martial arts, like, culture has been existent a long time in Hawaii, right? Like, is that why, like, like, how long ago, when did you realize you wanted to get into the sport?
Oh, okay. So it was when I saw Gina and Tanya fight at Elite XC down here in the Blaisdell. I started in Taekwondo though. Like I got my black belt. I started at 15, got my black belt at about 18. You know, I've been doing martial arts for a really long time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was that fight that just kind of really sparked my interest into the world of MMA. I don't know. And then I saw Gina and Julie fight. You know, that was a good fight. So I was just very much inspired by them. The rest kind of just came, you know, throughout the journey. Go ahead.
No, that's interesting. It's interesting you say that because every time, I mean, it's probably me just being stupid, but usually when you hear MMA in Hawaii, you start thinking about guys like me anyway, BJ Penn, Rumble on the Rock, stuff like that. So it's
I don't know, maybe I should have.
No, I mean, I think it just adds to your uniqueness that, you know, I mean, Taekwondo was your where you started. And
yeah,
I mean, a lot of people, you know, didn't have any option like me when I was growing up. I mean, grappling and jiu-jitsu and all that stuff wasn't even an option up until my late adulthood, like my late 20s. Mm-hmm. So the path, you know, it led you into it, but it's nice to hear somebody coming from a traditional background like Taekwondo. I mean, I always kind of like that anyway, when I'm watching fights. I just did a thing for MMA News a bit ago talking about that. But so with Invicta, I mean, when you, as fighters, usually like to focus on the fight in front of them, and you just got out of dealing with the illness and stuff and ready to get back. So when you look at your career long term, putting goalposts for your career, what's mm-hmm. the first one you want to hit? You're an Invicta now, so what's the next one?
To become a champion in Invicta, whether it be at 35 or 25, one or the other. But that is the next goalpost.
Nice. Nice. That's it's funny, the Fearless nickname. I mean, just talking to you for this short amount of time, I just can see your attitude and your demeanor. You're definitely focused and somebody that's ready to go. Where did somebody give you that nickname, or is that something you came up with on your own?
Actually, my old team that I was a part of, Jesus is Lord, with Rachel Osovich, Bob, my former coach, he came up with that name. Because before that, my amateur career, I was Fierce. Mm-hmm. But somewhere along the line, we talked about it. And then I actually like Fearless better. So
yeah, it's got a nice ring to it. I mean, I know you got it on your socials and stuff. And which, by the way, I know Jillian was like, we got to build up your social following. So I already got this up ready to go for you. So folks know where to follow you.
Cool. appreciate it.
But one last question before I let you go. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I know you just said at the beginning when we started talking, where do you that you're still coming out of, like shaking off the little last bit of the COVID mm-hmm. fog or whatever they call it. So when do you expect to be, you know, like get a fight signed, ready to go? The Cowan one is one that I'd like to see.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I could be ready for the next one. You know, I've been back at training now and just getting better and better. So, I mean, whichever one Shannon decides to put us on, by all means.
Cool. I mean,
it would be a good fight. I honestly feel like it'd be, sorry, I don't know if I'm late on a specific time with you or whatever, but
no, you're fine.
I just feel like it'd be a really good if people want to see fireworks, uh-huh. that would be a good one, you know.
You and Cowan.
Yeah.
No, I definitely see that. I because she's somebody that comes forward a lot and aggressive and I mean, yeah, it's definitely, I could see like a fight of the night potential.
Yeah,
on that one. I actually like that one.
She actually has gotten better. Like, you know, when you see your opponents, you want to watch and you want to analyze and assess. So she did make some tweaks into her game. You know, mm-hmm. like she doesn't necessarily come forward a lot. I've seen some things though. I mean, I'm not gonna like expose everything, but I've started to like calculate and analyze because that's what I like to do. I mean, at the end of the day, though, it's a fight, right? Anything can happen. I mean. Mm-hmm. Anything can happen, so it's just always having those adjustments, but always having like these specific things that you can look for to hopefully capitalize on. Because mm-hmm. I mean, the fighting game is a real chess match, you know, it's like it by inches. So sometimes if you're like at this distance or that distance, or if I take a slightly different angle, it can just change the outcome. And what I want to bring to Invicta and women's MMA is, again, I think we've risen to a great level as it is, but even showing them that we too can be super like high level chess match. I'm not like dogging the females, but I feel like because men started like, you know, in this progression first, so to speak, you know, they've kind of elevated to the high chess match. And I feel like we can do better at that as a whole. I'm not like discrediting the athleticism. I think everybody's like phenomenal and what we put out there is phenomenal. But I don't know. I just feel like we can do better as a whole, you know, overall. But it's been exciting. It's been good.
Yeah. Well, you're definitely in the right place for it. I mean, Invicta, I mean, it's all a female promotion. The first of anything. Like, I know they just started, I don't know if you saw yesterday, Medusa is like the all female combat jiu-jitsu promotion. And
interesting.
Yeah, Eddie Bravo started that. They had the first one yesterday. It came out of the blue.
Okay.
So but Invicta's kind of like the spearhead of something like that. And I think I mean, if you look at most of the UFC roster of women, they're all coming from Invicta.
Yeah, phenomenal athletes. Yeah.
So I think that says something about where you're already at and where, you know, you're definitely in the right place to do what you say you want to do. It's funny you mentioned that about watching, you know, the potential fight and studying your potential opponent. Mm-hmm. It's crazy because I watch fights the same way, and I always kind of look for something. I always look for something from what I know about their background. So now that I know a little bit about your where your martial arts came from, I'll probably notice it in your next fight, because mentioning Haley Cowan and looking at her last fight, even when she was in trouble, because I know her athleticism comes from being a gymnast, and I remember watching her in trouble when she tumbled backwards. Like, you could see a lot of that muscle memory. It was just natural to her, where she tumbles back to recover to in a fighting stance.
Right. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's amazing. So, I mean, I just love seeing stuff like that. And it's nice to hear somebody that kind of has the same, you know, you tap into when you're watching fights, you tap in the same way. So as one aging martial artist to a young up and coming martial artist, it's really nice to see that somebody else does that. But, I mean, that's all the questions I pretty much have. And I really do appreciate you talking. Again, the time difference, you're in Hawaii and I'm in New Jersey, so we had to do this on a Sunday. So I appreciate you spending some of your Sunday with me.
Yeah, not a problem.
If you want to shout out, I'm going to post your social stuff here on the bottom. But if you want to shout out any sponsors or anything like that, please go right ahead.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, always just grateful to my manager, Jason Adams, my support system, which is always like my Ohana. So, you know, grateful for their support and my teammates. Couple of, I would say it's a brand, ITSSA, if that didn't come out correctly. So ITSA is one of my sponsors. Fit and Fresh Hawaii is my meal prep sponsor. I think other than that, just that, and just, you know, grateful for the opportunity to come on here with you. You know, anytime you want to like talk story or whatever, like let me know. I can talk for a long time. So,
I'm only allotted a certain amount of time because I'm going to add this to
my apologies.
No, that's fine. I love it. It's the best. Definitely want to do this again. But again, what's her IG? That's her IG and her Twitter. I know Jillian was trying to help you get your social numbers up, and I want to, hopefully I can help do that too with this. So everybody make sure you get on all that Twitter, Instagram, follow Fearless Monica Franco. I mean, I'm really excited to see your first fight back. I mean, you're on Invicta's on Axis and everything now, so it's a great time. It's a great time. So thank you.
Thank you. Mahalo.
What's the proper response to that?
Proper response to that would, it's a good question. I gotta ask my nephew. He speaks fluent Hawaiian, so I'll let you know.
All right, cool.
Good question. It's a good question.
Hey guys, Ed here, East Coast side of the Coast to Coast Combat Hour podcast. If you like what we're doing, make sure you subscribe on YouTube and anywhere you listen to podcasts. Also, if you'd like to help us out and donate, the support links are in any of the podcast descriptions, and on some the links are also provided on our YouTube channel, The Blogboard Jungle. Thanks again for listening, and if you give us some support, we'll give you a shout out on the podcast, maybe bring you on for a UFC pay-per-view breakdown or two. Thanks again.